Good evening, one and all. Yes, nearly the end of February, and I think finally the end of this week. And we're not too bad where we are on the eastern coast, but the rest of America is getting it hit pretty heavy this next sort of week, it looks like. But when you think it's nearly the end of February and we've had temperatures of coming up to 70 this last week in February, it's not right, is it? It's just not right. Anyway, I am here and so is my guest. Now, we always talk about how people get this creative gene, whether it's a painting, whether it's a sculptor, whether it's a writer, whether it's a musician. You have these genes that's in you that allows you to create, and it's how you use that gene. You can use multiple things. We get people who write as well as paint and everything like that. Well, my guest today, she wrote, but when it came to job, she wrote slightly different to what the rest of us might think. Anyway, I better introduce her before we get into that, because on the show today I have the one and only Leslie Rasmussen. Hi, Leslie, how you doing?
Hi, Barry. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
I am very pleased. In fact, as we were chatting before the show started, we don't live that close to each other, but you know the places that I live in, and I know where you wrote about one of your books and stuff like that. It's very
Very
small.
close to where you live.
Very indeed, indeed. In fact, I was down in Shelton, last week to pick up some stuff from an estate sale I just won. Small world indeed. I said, we said about this in the show lots of times, and we're up to about 1700 shows now, been going for a little while, and about this creative, this gene thing. But you wrote television comedies. That is slightly different. Now, that doesn't seem like it's a studied in UCLA, to write comedy.
Actually, you can study it. I didn't.
Really?
I was a communications major.
Okay.
But you can study it if you're in the film department. But I didn't start out knowing that's what I wanted to do. So the only thing I knew, I lived in LA my whole life, and I have a weird fascination with movie studios. So all I knew is I wanted to work on one, do
Right.
something, anything. I didn't care. So, but my career took me to the writing.
And did you sort of get pulled into, send sketches through, or did you get asked to do sketches, or did you sort of just come up with a sketch and send it through and that see if it suited anybody?
Well, actually, at the time that I was doing it, you wrote what was called a spec script, which
Okay.
meant you took any show on the air and you wrote a script for that show, and then you showed it around. And so I did that. I wrote a bunch of them until I found one that I thought was really good. And this woman who was on this other show on The Lot, I was working on what used to be called the Mary Tyler Moore Lot,
Right.
and which is right near my house. And when I was there, I met so many writers. And this one woman took me under her wing, and she loved my writing. So she got me an agent. She helped me get her agent, actually. And then she helped me get a script on the show she was working on. So that was my very first script.
Wow.
And from that point on, I just loved it. I loved the camaraderie of working in the room, because with sitcoms, you write a lot of the stuff in the room and you work with other people. And it was a blast. It was so much fun. I loved
Do
it.
you sort of you did you use each other, sounding boards to sort of
Yes,
come up? Yeah, that's what I thought.
absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's exactly right, because the people that run the show are the ones that kind of have the ideas for whatever the show is, and then you're all working together.
Now, I've got Sirius in my car for the radio, because then I can listen to the soccer and all that sort of stuff, a lot of the BBC stuff. And I was about 2 3 weeks ago, I was sort of looking for, I can't remember what it was. I was looking for one game and that had finished, and the other one was on some other station I couldn't find. Anyway, I'm flicking through the stations and I came up with old radio comedies, and I'm talking of 30s, 40s, that sort of time. And I listened to them and I'm laughing. The jokes are still funny today. I mean, it really was. And this morning, and in fact, I had to phone my mother when I came home. I was listening to Fibber McGee.
Now, and Molly.
I remember my mother, if we told a lie, my mother said to us, "You're a Fibber McGee." And we had no idea what it was. So it must have reached, England sort of thing, you know. Anyway, I phoned her up and I said, "You know, you used to tell when we told a lie, we were Fibber McGees." I said, "Now I know who that was."
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? My father was a huge old radio buff.
Right.
So everywhere we went in the car, all our road trips, we listened to The Shadow and Fibber McGee and Molly and all those shows.
Yep.
I grew up on listening to all those shows because my dad loved them.
I was listening to Gunsmoke today on the radio. Gunsmoke on the radio.
Started on the radio. So did soap operas.
Yeah.
They all started on the radio.
I mean, we used to always have the radio on, you know, growing up in the, especially Sundays. We used to have two-way family favourites, which was like the troops in England and the troops in Germany sort of thing. You know, I'm talking about the sort of early, in the 50s. And then after that, 2 o'clock, there was always a comedy, a radio comedy, Clitheroe Kid, Round the Horn, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we always used to have that. It was, and, well, we used to have the Archers on in the morning, first off, the omnibus everyday story of country folk. Still going, I think. It's been going for about 100 years now as a radio serial. But, yeah, and, you know, you listen to it and it's still funny. This is the thing about me. I mean, some of it is a little bit dated.
Some of it's dated or very politically incorrect.
Oh, don't start me on that. I don't know if you've read. Read that they're rewriting Roald Dahl's books?
That makes me so sick. I know my son told me that the other day and I was so upset about it because people have to understand the times were different.
Of course,
so you don't rewrite something because then that means our books are going to be rewritten in 30 years because they don't like something we said.
So what's next? Shakespeare and then the Bible, is it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Anyway, talking about you and your writing, and as you said, you know, you wrote for quite a few, but Reynolds, Roseanne, Drew Carey, The Wild Thornberrys, Sweet Valley High.
Sweet Valley High.
But then you've also written a lot of essays, haven't you?
Yes. After I stopped writing television because my kids were born and it was just too hard to get back in, I started writing a lot of essays for Huffington Post. So I have like over 20, I don't know, 22 or something like that. I'm still writing them for them. Right. I've written for other people. I used to write for Maria Shriver, used to have a different website that she did blogs on. I wrote for her. So I just kept the writing up, even though I went back and got a master's degree. I became a nutritionist, but I kept writing.
Yeah, that's
and
something
I had
else.
My own business.
I mean, going from writing to a nutritionist, little bit of a jump there.
It was, but at the time I was trying to figure out something else I was very interested in, and I was always interested in health and nutrition, so I started my own business. But honestly, after 10 years, I was like, I need to get back to the writing full time, which is why I closed my business and went back to writing, and then I decided to write a book.
And you did, with Happily Ever After. What led you to that?
You know, I was going through a lot of the stuff that I wanted my character to go through because I didn't know what my identity was after having kids and trying to figure out what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I had a ton of friends all going through the same thing. All their kids were getting older and independent. And, you know, we were all in marriages for a long time. And we also had parents that were aging.
Right.
We were that sandwich generation. And so I wanted to write about real issues, you know, that everybody could relate to. It's called women's commercial fiction, but I've had lots of men read it because there's also a husband, there's also a father, there's people, you know, going through this sandwich generation. So it's written so people will relate to it and relate to the characters or see their family or their friends in it.
Right.
So that's kind of how I came to it.
And that's the best way. I always say that's the best way that you, if you can write like that and people read themselves into the characters. I always say, I mean, obviously on the show we have, you know, we have sometimes we have books about illness or abuse or, you know, recovery from sort of deaths and stuff like that. If you write it in a novel format, that sort of thing. Say an abusive marriage or something like that, and you write it in a novel format, people reading it that are going through the similar sort of thing, or have somebody, know somebody who's that, they put mm-hmm. that person in the character's role. They relate to it. And a lot more people learn from that than if you do, you know, seven things not to do sort of thing. And I always say that's a lot better. And it's like you said, if people read your stuff, your book, and it comes up, you know, after Happily Ever After, and they're reading it and they're thinking, you know, that's happened to me. You know, I look at that and that's me. And people take a lot more notice of that. Is that the response you've got?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the readers and even people I know contacted me, people that I went to high school with, I was never close with, contacted me and they said, you know, my father went through that, or my mother went through that, or I'm going through that in my marriage. And it was really interesting to have that many people relate to them, which is what I wanted.
Right.
And it's not biographical, but it's because it's so many different people kind of put together. It's more situational
right. yes.
than it is biographical. But, you know, it's hard when you watch your parents age.
Oh, crikey.
And
tell
I also
me.
Want, I know, and I also wanted a protagonist that wasn't 25, because a lot of books, they're so young. I wanted somebody in midlife who was, you know, reanalyzing her life and worried about her identity and figuring out who she was at that point for the rest of her life.
Because you also speak about empowerment women in midlife mm-hmm. On panels and that as well, don't you?
Yes, I do, because, you know, I think a lot of women sort of think like, well, I've had my kids, now I don't know what to do. So they sort of close down. Mm. And so we talk a lot about how midlife empowerment, the word midlife crisis always bothered me because it sounds negative. It sounds like something's wrong with you and people make fun of you. But the truth is, it's not a crisis. It's a time where you can reanalyze and say, I have the rest of my life. What do I want to do for the next 30 years? You still have enough years to be productive, be creative, do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's when you get old. It's when you get old and I wake up in the morning and think, well, what part of me is going to ache today? You know,
yeah, I know, really. That's true.
That's
which part of me is going to hurt today
exactly.
and which part of me is going to feel good?
Yeah, it's true, though. I mean, it is, you know. People say, well, how are you feeling? I say, well, I woke up this morning. No, that's good enough for me. After Happily Ever After, it sounds like you had a real good response to it. I know, and I didn't say this because I normally say that it's been, but you are a multi award winning author. So we've got to say this.
The book has won a lot of awards. I think it's over 15 now, which is just so exciting because you never know. It's such a vulnerable thing to write a book. You put it out there, you have no idea if people are going to trash it, if they're going to say it's terrible, or if they're going to like it. So every time it won an award, I was like, oh my God, somebody likes it that doesn't know me. You know?
Exactly. And it's also interesting because one of the things I always say to people, you know, people think as soon as they've written it and they, you know, it's in print, that's the hard work done. That's when the hard work starts, I always tell people. And it sounds like with your book has got out there, you know, it's won these awards, it's been recommended by lots of people and stuff like, and groups and stuff like that. So it sounds like, you know, getting the book out there actually worked pretty good for you.
It did, but it's a lot of work. And like you just said, the writing of it is nothing compared to the promoting
totally,
of it.
Totally, totally, yeah.
You have to be out there doing, you know, in person, on Zoom, you know, and it's expensive, honestly. I mean, because you're promoting a book, so you have to pay for ads and because you have to get noticed because there's a billion books every year. So, you know, your book will go by the wayside if it's not noticed or if, you know, you can't get it out there for people to even know it exists.
Until they re-edit it again, of course.
Yeah, right. Hopefully not.
So when did this Happily Ever After come out?
It came out in 2021.
Okay.
During the pandemic, of course.
Oh, of
course. That was, you know, trying to do in-person things was not very easy. I got to do more in-person things as time went on.
Yeah.
I'm speaking at a big convention this weekend in San Diego. The convention this weekend is on growth, resilience, transformation, and what's the other one? Intention. And it's really about being able to, they want me to speak about being able to pivot your career over and over again, especially in midlife.
Ah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm trying to think, when did I move over here? So I did that. I must have moved over here. 2000. So I was 48 when I moved over here. So okay. I basically did.
Are you same?
Yeah, that was a big upheaval for me.
Yeah, so you're a perfect example. Yeah. You're in midlife and you're changing what you're doing.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that was a while ago. But yeah, no, it is. I mean, it was a big upheaval to leave. And I still now. I miss all my family there, obviously, and everything like that sort of thing. So. But I do try and get back occasionally, yeah, like every other year or something.
I love England. I've been to London like 4 times. I love it.
Oh, well, see, I used to live in Barnet, which is about just on the edge of London, on the north edge.
Okay.
It's actually Hertfordshire, okay. But people have never heard of Hertfordshire in America, so I always say North London.
Okay, we know that.
So after this success, you've got a new book coming out this year.
Yes, I have a new book called The Stories We Cannot Tell. And again, it's this one's more about women's issues, it's about two friends who meet in a support group when they go through a tragedy. But it includes a love story, it includes infertility and miscarriage and all kinds of subjects that women go through, and pregnancy, all kinds of things.
And are quite often scared to talk about. Or reluctant to talk about.
Well, exactly. And that's why I wrote the book, is because I have so many friends who've gone through so many things, and people don't talk about it unless somebody else does it first.
Yeah.
And so people are ashamed if, you know, they have trouble getting pregnant or whatever those stories are. And those are the stories we cannot tell. So I wanted to put them out there. So these two women bond over their own stories.
That's very, very interesting. Person I went to school since I was 4, I think. His daughter, his youngest daughter, had a baby. Mm-hmm. Must be about 7 months ago, without any palate, and you know the cleft lip and all this sort of stuff. You know, and can't eat properly, obviously, because got no palate at the moment. Anyway, the baby's sort of like a baby's group they're at, and it. This woman met somebody who'd had a child go through the same, you know, because they can't do the surgery till one, and went through the same and everything like that. And they sort of arranged to have a coffee and stuff like that, and then arranged to sort of meet again. And my friend's daughter, you know, tried to phone this person, no reply, nothing happened. Anyway, long and the short of it is, about a couple of months later, they were in Tesco's in the supermarket again, and this woman was there. And this woman basically totally ignored her, totally blanked her, like didn't want to be reminded of the baby and all this sort of stuff, you know? And I thought, well, crikey, you know, you of all people should know the issues bringing up, you know, having a child with issues like that. And yet there you were, totally ignoring somebody who was reaching out to you.
And no support. And everybody needs support, especially when you're going through something that not everybody goes through.
Yeah.
You know, you need to reach out and have support. So that's cruel.
I mean, it was very, I mean, she wrote a nice article, you know, an article thing on Facebook about it and that. And I mean, the baby's called Story, which I think is a great name when it's somebody, you know, with a baby with these issues and everything like that. She's as happy as can be, this little baby, but she's got, you know, she can't eat, she's small because she's got no palate, and then she's got the lip, sort of the hole in the lip sort of thing, and you wouldn't even notice it. She's happy to post pictures about a story and stuff like that, and you don't notice it. You just don't. I mean, it's okay. It's like having a cold sore, if you know.
You just overlook it.
Was this new book, Stories We Cannot Tell, was this something people asked about or you'd heard discussed about? What led you this way?
I've talked to so many people. You know, over the years, about people who've gone through things. I've gone through a few things. So, you know, I just thought that it's a book that I wanted to write really badly because so many of my friends and I have discussed situations with pregnancies or miscarriages, and people don't talk about it. You know, people have miscarriages and they don't tell anybody they were pregnant yet. So if they have one early, it's devastating. But they don't necessarily walk around going, "Oh, I just had a miscarriage." It's like they keep it to themselves.
Oh yeah.
And there's some shame there in some weird way, which I would love to, hopefully this book will take away some of that shame if people read it.
Have you noticed that people don't tell you they're pregnant until after 3 months these days?
Yes, because they don't want to say, because then if they miscarry, then they have to go back and say, guess what,
Exactly. I mean, I know, not being a woman, I couldn't say, but to me, I'd be so happy to let people know as soon as you found out you're pregnant. But that's, I guess I'm a man.
I know, but people don't want to do that anymore because miscarriage is like 1 in 3 pregnancies.
Yes, it's terrible these days. I don't know whether it's got worse or we just hear about it more, I'm sure.
I think you just hear about it. I think in the other days, there weren't, home pregnancy tests. So people didn't know as early.
Right.
So they just didn't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I could just be late. There was no way to tell, was there, sort of thing. You're quite right. Stories We Cannot Tell, coming out later this year. Have you got anything else on the pipeline?
I am just starting. I'm at the very beginnings of a new book, but I don't know exactly. I know I've written some of it, but I'm still like working on the outline. I normally outline the whole book first.
Oh, right.
But I was getting like writer's block, so I decided to just sit down and start writing.
Yes.
And I did that, and it sort of helped me. And then I'll have to sit down and really figure out everything that's going to happen in the book.
I don't think that writer's block to me is that the characters just don't want to talk to you that day. It could be that they were trying to tell you the story the day before and they wanted it changed in some way and you ignored them. So they said, I'm not going to talk to you today. That's it.
See, for me, writer's block is when I don't know what the idea is. Every time, as soon as I get the idea, I can write.
Right.
But it's when I don't know what the whole, I have a basic of an idea, but not enough of it to sit down and go, this is an entire book. Because in sitcoms, it's, 22 minutes. Whatever it is, you can write it in seconds because it has to have a beginning, middle, and end, and it doesn't have to be 300 pages.
So
it's a big difference.
Well, it's like people who go from writing for writing novels to writing for films. Or could have written for papers who then go to writing novels. Well, they used to. If you've done for papers, you're used to pricing and putting the facts down and in limited things. Where if you then go into films, you don't have to sort of put down all the descriptions because you've got the camera to show you the scenes and scenery and stuff.
I mean, when I first wrote my novel, I was like, oh, I have to describe everything. There's nobody here that's just going to take. She walked in the room in a, looking, because it was raining, and somebody else writes up the whole, figures out the whole, what she's going to wear and her umbrella and everything else. No, you have to write all of that, which is a big difference.
I mean, if somebody comes in out of the rain, shaking the water off their clothes, somebody's coming out of the rain. You know what they're most likely going to have, You don't have to undoing the 4 buttons and taking the hood back, hanging out the raincoat and putting the umbrella in the, in a bucket in the hallway. You just don't have to. as you said, you've won, and been recommended for a lot of prizes and awards and that. How does that make you feel when you get all that stuff? All those awards and recommendations.
It's so wonderful. I remember when my book right before it came out, I got my first big review and I didn't even want to open the email because I was so flipped out. What if they hate it? And I opened it and it was such a good review. And then it's the same thing with the awards. When you find out that you won anything, whether you win it or whether you're a finalist or an honorable mention, it always means that they liked the book. To put it up at the top, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Well, A, you've got recommended for it, and B, somebody's actually read it to come out, and then they liked it. So it's like a treble thing. It's really good. Okay, time is getting on, so what I'm going to do now anyway is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and, of course, your books.
Great. Well, my website is Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, A, as in apple, Rasmussen. It's R-A-S as in Sam, M as in Mary, U-S-S as in Sam, E-N as in Nancy.com. And there's a way to get on my newsletter. If you read the book and they have a book club, I love to go to book clubs. So I will visit them virtually, or if they're in Los Angeles, I will go. You can follow me on Facebook at Leslie A. Rasmussen Author. I'm on Instagram at Leslie R. Author. And my book, After Happily Ever After, is everywhere books are sold. It's in the libraries. And if it's not in your library, you can request it. And The Stories That We Cannot Tell will be out this summer. I'm just waiting for the exact date in July that it's coming out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Leslie, for being a guest on the show. It's been great chatting to you. And good luck. Good luck with the new book when it comes out.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Barry, for having me.
My pleasure. There you go. My guest today, Leslie Rasmussen. And as you said, you do a Leslie with an L-E-S-L-I-E. The A for the middle name, and then Rasmussen, R-A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N. Put them all together, add a .com, and you get her website. And you can find out more about Happy Ever After, the awards she's got, and of course, and her new book when it comes out. Pretty good. Pretty good indeed. Enjoyed that. Anyway, that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we've got one thing left to say. Don't forget. And stop yawning.